Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, decriminalization in the context of HIV. The 69th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs was held March 9th through 13th. UNAIDS, the United Nations Development Program, and the International Network of People Who Use Drugs, together with several other partners, launched a new joint guidance note at a side event during the CND entitled Decriminalization of Drug Use in the Context of HIV. This new guidance note provides governments with practical, evidence-based recommendations on how to align drug policies with human rights standards, public health principles, and the lived realities of people who use drugs. There were several excellent speakers at this side event. We only have time to hear a few, so let's start with Eamon Murphy, Director of Regional Support Teams for Asia-Pacific and Eastern Europe and Central Asia regions at UNAIDS.
We were reflecting earlier. It's been more than 30 years since I've worked in the area of harm reduction. It was my first area of public health I worked on before AIDS, and how far we've come and yet how far we've got to go and how often we slide back and forth. So these guidance, alongside the other components, are critical for us. Fortunately for me, Niamh is going to unpack the guidance for us later. I'm going to talk about how we situate it in the short time I'm speaking with you. How do we put this in the place of in the space for HIV and related issues to drug use? How do we understand the significance of this guidance and its practical implications for the HIV responses? It's helpful to look at the recently approved Global AIDS Strategy. Approved by our board in December of last year. While we don't have time today to go through the strategy in full, I want to highlight a few key elements that are especially relevant to our discussions here at the CND and to our side event and the guidance. And other speakers will address aspects of the guidance for us. The QR code is up here for us so that and we'll put it up again later so that you can download the guidance and have it firsthand. Let me emphasize that this strategy for the Global AIDS Strategy was developed through a truly global consultative process. It reflects thousands of voices from every region of the world, the diverse communities and sectors involved in the response to HIV. But it's particularly important that the work that's related to us here at the CND is loud and clear in this Global AIDS Strategy, as it was in the one before. It was shaped by people living with HIV, young people, key populations, governments, donors, researchers, parliamentarians, our UN partners, some of whom are with us today. Through surveys, regional dialogues, virtual consultations, and deep-lived experience-based conversations, you helped us refine it and strengthen it. It sets the place for the guidance that we're looking at and launching today. I want to take this opportunity to particularly thank INPUT and the regional and country networks of people who use drugs for their powerful engagement throughout the process. Your contributions have been invaluable and they are clearly reflected in the strategy. So, what are the key asks, the key priorities of the new global AIDS strategy that this guidance is helping to implement? It calls for a renewed collective commitment to achieving the 2030 goal. And it starts not with institutions or systems, but with people, especially those most affected by HIV, including people who use drugs. These communities continue to face some of the most severe human rights violations and legal barriers, which directly undermine their access to HIV and other health and social services. I'm Regional Director for Asia Pacific and Eastern Europe, Central Asia. We have some of the most regressive laws in the world facing people, not just people who use drugs, but particularly people who use drugs in the context of other criminalization. That's why this piece is really important in that broader dialogue around criminalization, which the Global AIDS Strategy and the targets in the high-level meeting political declaration address. So this strategy is more focused, more prioritized than previously. The previous one had 15 areas of action. We've now got it reduced to 8 result areas. Each one designed to drive sustainability. We all know the global environment we're working within and the restriction and reduction of finance for development, for health, for HIV. So it's important that we keep this sustainability, but as part of it, as front and centre of our work, as part of it to ensure full community engagement and to strengthen national systems and health security. Whether the topic is HIV prevention, financing or integration with universal health coverage, the strategy places people most affected at the centre. This new global AIDS strategy is not business as usual. It responds to the world we're living in today, which is changing quite rapidly. A world of overlapping crises, widening inequalities, shrinking civic space, and new health and economic shocks. What is new is not just the framing, but the level of ambition. The strategy contains even stronger commitments to human rights, decriminalisation, and to communities as leaders of sustainable HIV responses. Our guidance today will help take it even further and take these aspects of the global AIDS strategy into more concrete ways that we can all work together, community, UN, governments, to help this be implemented and the changes that we need to make sure the responses are both sustainable but rights-based. It also includes much clearer lines of accountability, who needs to do what, by when, and with what resources. In short, the strategy is designed not only to sustain progress, but to close the gaps that are still costing lives. So today, we're looking at decriminalisation and harm reduction, the role of community leadership for them both. On this slide, you can see some of the strategy's action points that will shape our joint work. And as I said earlier, joint is not UN. Joint is all the partners working together in these areas over the next 5 years. Harm reduction is essential, not optional, has been a core component of the most successful HIV responses, but not enough of those responses included. The strategy explicitly highlights needle and syringe programs and opioid agonist therapy as vital HIV prevention tools. It's not a new message. We've all heard it before. And yet no country reporting to UNAIDS in 2025 had fully met the harm reduction targets. This alone underscores the urgent need for sustainable funding and removing the legal and policy barriers. What we know from the evidence is that criminalization of drug use and possession for personal use and related punitive measures is driving people away from HIV prevention, testing and treatment. And sadly, in some countries, we're seeing efforts to recriminalize and set back what has been achieved. There is a link between punitive laws, knowledge of HIV status, and lower viral suppression. In countries where drug use is criminalized, knowledge of HIV status is 14% lower, and viral suppression is also 14% lower among people living with HIV. So these are critical issues, and why it is not just small effects, but their population level impacts that shape the trajectory of national HIV epidemics and why we must address the issue of criminalization. Criminalization pushes the people underground, increases the stigma and discrimination, creates barriers at every step of care. Criminalized environments fragment service uptake, fewer people test, fewer start treatment, fewer stay on treatment. And crucially, criminalization undermines the community-led responses, one of the three central pillars of the strategy for ending AIDS. The strategy is explicit. Ending AIDS requires removing the legal and policy barriers, including criminalization of key populations, such as people who use drugs. This slide shows the 16 top-line global AIDS targets. The following are especially relevant to harm reduction and drug policy. Ensuring that 90% of people who inject drugs have access to needle and syringe programs and opioid agonist therapy. We won't go into how far we're from that. Reducing punitive legal and policy environments so that people who use drugs can access services and fully enjoy their human rights. Strengthening community leadership at all levels of the response from service delivery to monitoring and advocacy. Anton and I were talking earlier about the high-level meeting, the political declaration that's going to be negotiated this year. That's going to be critical because in it we have the 3-10s targets, which includes the issues of criminalization. How do we ensure they remain? How do we ensure they're strengthened? This is an important issue for all our partners to work with the national governments who will form the groups debating this in New York, groups that Michelle represents, community organizations, UN, other partners that need to work together on this. So we have a clear strategy. We have clear technical guidance that we are launching today, and we're going to hear more about in different aspects from our partners on the panel, developed in cooperation with UN partners, with community and academia. But what we most importantly need, we can talk about sustainability, financial, programmatic sustainability, but what we need is that political leadership to translate evidence into the legal, policy, and financing reforms to truly deal with the changing environment that we're working in for drug policy, for HIV, for wider health issues that all intersect.
That was Eamon Murphy, Director of Regional Support Teams for Asia-Pacific and Eastern Europe and Central Asia regions at UNAIDS, speaking at a side event held during the 69th session of the CND, entitled Decriminalizing Drug Use, Improving HIV Responses in Countries, Meeting the Goals of Global AIDS Strategy 2026 to 2031. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Another speaker at this event was Anton Basenko, Executive Director of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs.
As you heard, this document represents years of collaboration between communities, researchers, and UN partners. And importantly, it reflects the voices and experiences of people who use drugs themselves. Today, I want to speak about one simple but transformative principle. Communities must be at the center of drug policy reform. And our consortium, INPUT, UNDP, UNAIDS, RELEASE, and International Center on Human Rights and Drug Policy is a clear proof that this approach really works. For decades, people who use drugs have been spoken about, studied, policed, and imprisoned, but rarely listened to. Yet, it is our communities who have lived with the consequences of criminalization, the stigma, the violence, the barriers to healthcare, and the loss of friends and family. And the evidence is now overwhelming. Criminalization does not protect health, it undermines it. Globally, people who inject drugs remain disproportionately affected by HIV. Fear of arrest drives people away from health services, pushes drug use into unsafe environments, and increases risks like needle sharing, rushed injection, overdosage. These are not inevitable outcomes of drug use. They are outcomes of punitive policy choices. Decriminalization is therefore not only a drug policy issue, it is a public health intervention, it is a human rights obligation, and it is a necessary step if we are really serious about ending AIDS, moreover when we are on the last mile before 2030. But the question is not simply whether country decriminalizes, the real question is how. As the guidance we launched today makes clear, poorly designed reforms can reproduce the harm of criminalization under a different name. Through excessive policing, administrative penalties, coercive treatment of or punitive thresholds, true decriminalization must remove criminal penalties for drug use and possession for personal use and minimize unnecessary interaction with the criminal justice system. Most importantly, it must be grounded in the reality of people's lives and based on the term and principle we use, so-called values and preferences of the community of people who use drugs. And this is where community leadership becomes really, really essential. And later today, we will hear my community peer from Nigeria, Anyedi, who will talk you more about that. People who use drugs understand the risks, the markets, the patterns of consumption, and the barriers to services better than anyone else. Our knowledge is not theoretical. It is lived daily and often hard-won. That is why the guidance emphasizes meaningful participation of people who use drugs in the design, implementation, and monitoring of decriminalization policies. Without the participation, reforms risk missing their target, or worse, reinforcing the very harms they claim to address. At INPUT, we have also spent years challenging the narratives that block progress. You probably, or some of you probably know our publication, The Red Herring, where we describe how drug policy debates are often distracted by misleading arguments, claims that decriminalization will increase drug use, that it fuels crime, or threaten public order. These arguments are repeatedly used to delay reforms, even when the evidence shows completely otherwise. They are called red herrings for a reason. They divert attention from the real issue. And the real issue is simple. Criminalization harms people. It harms their health, it harms their rights, and it harms the global HIV response. But decriminalization, however, cannot stand alone. And critically, decriminalization must apply to all drugs and all people, not only to those considered politically acceptable. So guidance launch is only the first, very important, but the first step. There is not a simple way of the advocacy and implementation on the country level, which is waiting on us. So to equip and enforce community-led advocacy, INPUT will develop community brief explaining what is the guidance, why it is important, and how practically you can use it in your activism and advocacy. And then we would like to equip them with some training, trainer's manual to prepare a real group of drivers of decreeing changes. If we want policies that improve health outcomes, reduce HIV transmission, and uphold human rights, then communities must move from the margins to the center of decision-making. We always say nothing about us without us. As we launch guidance today, I want to acknowledge the many community members who contributed their knowledge, often anonymously and sometimes at personal risk. But their voices shape this document, and they remind us that policy reform is not abstract. It is about real life. And let us be clear, the goal is not simply better drug policy. The goal is dignity, the goal is our health, and the goal is justice. Communities have already shown what works: harm reduction, peer support, solidarity, care, and decriminalization. Now it is time for governments and institutions to listen. Thank you.
That was Anton Basenko, Executive Director of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs, speaking at a side event held during the 69th session of the CND entitled Decriminalizing Drug Use, Improving HIV Responses in Countries, Meeting the Goals of Global AIDS Strategy 2026-2031. Here's Anyedi Akpan, National Chairperson of the Drug Harm Reduction Network in Nigeria.
I'll be presenting on a research that was conducted here in Nigeria. And it involved focus group discussions and key informant interviews with people who use drugs, but also involved public opinion polls to also test, gauge what Nigerians think about the issue of decriminalization. We know as a harm reduction program implementer and the leader of a network of people who use drugs that criminalization of drug use is a major barrier to health service access for people who use drugs in Nigeria, especially with Nigeria being one of the countries implementing the needle and syringe program. We've had cases of a seizure of harm reduction commodities, including needle and syringes, including an naloxone, that are for people who use drugs at harm reduction sites. We know that during local security alerts, like just last week when there was an alert for protest in Nigeria, that people who use drugs are those who are immediately targeted. They are easy, low-hanging fruits for law enforcement to show up their numbers in terms of arrest and prosecution. And in a recent case which we had in Gombe State, three persons who use drugs were arrested without actually being in possession of drugs or being in a vicinity where drugs was used. They were actually raided in their houses, taken to court, and then sentenced without an opportunity to defend themselves or an opportunity for legal representation. They were sentenced to 3 months jail and with an option of fine of $14. Of course, we know that for these people, the reality of poverty and social exclusion doesn't allow them to have money to bail themselves. And so in most cases, they are sent to jail. The common scenario is usually raid, arbitrary arrest, even without possession of drugs, threats, detention. And of course, all of this comes together to help law enforcement officers to demand for money for administrative bail. And when people who use drugs that are arrested are not able to afford that money, they are arraigned on charges other than the drug charges for other petty offenses and then sent to prison without even an opportunity to defend themselves. It's much harsher for women due to gender norms and roles assigned to them. Most times, the discrimination and the punishment starts from the family members. In one case, family members had accused a woman who uses drugs falsely, arraigned her before a magistrate, and sent her to jail for being, in quotes, a disgrace to the family. also cases of women who are beaten up by relatives, sexual partners, and spouses. There are also cases of reported sexual abuse, which are denied by law enforcement, physical abuse, and rape of women who use drugs who are arrested. The consequences of this is that it promotes corruption within the law enforcement in the country because of the need to arrest people and extort them. It burdens the country's correctional institutions because of persons sent to prisons for petty offenses, which of course are offenses that they were not arrested for. It disrupts the justice system, decreases health outcomes, and promotes stigma and discrimination, and also engenders social and family fractions. And all of this is made worse by the fact that there is no clear legal redress mechanism for which people who use drugs can afford. So for people who use drugs in Nigeria, after the focus group discussions and the interviews we had with the community leaders, we also went to the public to seek the opinion of the public. We put out an online opinion poll. In the opinion poll, 67% of Nigerians felt that they supported decriminalization of drug use. 75% of them felt that the current drug policies were ineffective in preventing drug use, and 95% of them agreed that drug use should be in the domain of public health. We are demanding, as people who use drugs, for the decriminalization of possession of drugs and drug use equipment for personal use, including harm reduction commodities. We are demanding for investigation and redress for abuses, arbitrary detentions, assaults, and other human rights violations of people for using drugs. We are also demanding enabling legislation to promote scale up of and access to harm reduction services that are gender aligned and delivered by people with lived experience of drug use. Thank you.
That was Oniyede Ekpan, National Chairperson of the Drug Harm Reduction Network in Nigeria. While we still have time, here's Neve Eastwood, Executive Director of the UK NGO Release.
Along with colleagues at the International Centre on Human Rights and Drug Policy, INPUD, UNAIDS, UNDP, Release co-authored the guidance note on decriminalisation and HIV. So I am absolutely delighted to be here with you today, with this esteemed panel, and with all of you to launch this important technical document. I will talk briefly about the background, approach, and recommendations, try to unpack it as Eamon has said. The goal of the document is to contextualize decriminalization of drug use and personal possession within a rights-based public health response to HIV. We know that drug decriminalization is key to fulfilling health and human rights commitments. There has been a growing chorus from human rights treaty bodies and mechanisms calling for the end of criminalization of people who use drugs. The UN United Nations Common Position on Drugs recommends that member states promote alternatives to conviction and punishment, including the decriminalization of drug possession for personal use. Across the world, almost 40 countries have ended the criminalization of people who use drugs. The guidance note draws on the evidence from these jurisdictions. It is also informed by expert input through consultations with academics, civil society, and crucially, the community of people who use drugs. These consultations were led by our wonderful colleagues at INPUD. The guidance note should assist a range of people, drug user groups, civil society, policymakers, government, to advocate for and operationalize drug decriminalization as an essential part of the HIV response. The goal isn't just to equip people with an understanding of previous and existing decriminalization models, but to give them the tools for advocating for and analyzing future models in their countries through high-level principles grounded in human rights and technical analysis. The link between decriminalization and the HIV response is clear. As Michelle and Eamon noted, HIV and criminalization disproportionately impacts people who use drugs. And evidence from across the world shows that criminalization undermines the social determinants of health and creates barriers to effective public health responses. The guide provides an overview of decriminalization in part one of the guide, what it is, where it's happening, why drugs should be decriminalized as part of the HIV response. It also raises other factors important to consider alongside personal use, such as decriminalization of paraphernalia equipment, the decriminalization of non-violent drug offenses, such as low-level supply, expungement of criminal records and police practices, as well as addressing the intersectional experience of people who use drugs, particularly around gender, sexuality, race and youth. In part two of the guide, the link between we go through the different parts that need to be analyzed. So we looked at the three key factors that are key to developing a model of decriminalization. Firstly, how to distinguish between personal use and supply based on drug quantities. Secondly, what actions are taken if drugs are found? And thirdly, who is responsible for the on-the-ground implementation? One of the arching goals of the guide was to give stakeholders a confident understanding of language, frameworks, and key issues to consider in the design and implementation of decriminalisation, both generally and as it relates to HIV. Those frameworks can then be considered and scrutinised in terms of their merits in the specific country context. The good practice guidelines that are framed throughout the document have been developed to underpin those models of decriminalization, models that should remove barriers for people to access health and social support, improve their health and well-being, which can help facilitate effective HIV responses and respect the rights of people who use drugs. And that is why the good practice guidelines themselves call for a no sanction model with minimal to no contact with state actors such as police. The guidance note details how decriminalisation is effective to an to an effective public health response to HIV. This will be best achieved through a rights-based approach and a public health framing, which we will truly enable people who use drugs to realise their rights to health. Thank you.
That was Neve Eastwood, Executive Director of the UK NGO Release, speaking at a side event held during the 69th session of the CND entitled Decriminalizing Drug Use, Improving HIV Responses in Countries, Meeting the Goals of Global AIDS Strategy 2026 to 2031. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for Community Radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio port service. Please support public media and local community radio. Become members. Become volunteers. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Links are at the website kboo.fm/freeculture, along with an archive of past shows. Theme music for Free Culture Radio is composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare and is used with permission of the artist. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!